Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
That, to me, is all very much a part of what it means to live art, where it's not something that you just go and do. It's not a job. Just like being involved with climate justice, it's not a job. It's not, you don't do it and then not do it. It just is.
I am so honored to be in conversation today with three brilliant women in the community of Elsewhere Studios in Paonia, Colorado. I'm currently an artist in residence for the second cohort of Elsewhere's family residencies in July 2021. This residency is generously funded by the Sustainable Arts Foundation, so a big thanks to that incredible organization for helping make this happen. My family has been here for a few days now, enjoying the space in this lovely mountain town. I've been working on paintings for a project collaboration with Lee Noel Wilson, which I'll be sharing about in a future episode. And as part of my time at Elsewhere, I also wanted to record an episode of the Artist Mother podcast, thanks to the generous community who has shown up here at our live event. Today, I'm joined by Carolina Porras, Laura Deutsch, and Kara Judea Alhadesh. How'd I do? Good. Carolina Porras Monroy grew up in the swampy suburbs of Central Florida and is currently living in Paonia, Colorado, where she's director of Elsewhere Studios Artist Residency. She is co-founder of Piney Woods Atlas, a countrywide artist residency research project highlighting radical and DIY spaces through publications and online resources. Currently, her creative practice involves working with her hands in any way through drawing, textile work, and repairing bikes. Her most recent project investigates identities of being first generation Latinx by having conversations around language, traditions, food, and music. And Laura Deutsch is an artist, educator, and cultural organizer who believes that media making can contribute new narratives and possibilities for a more just, inclusive, and imaginative world. Her work flows between mediums, using video, audio, and public interventions to center the knowledge and power rooted in community stories and to unpack social and historic layers embedded in the spaces and places we inhabit. Laura lives and works in Philadelphia with her partner, Stephen, and her son, Phoenix, who is 3 years old and currently out playing with my three-year-old. So that was a good pairing. And Dr. Kara Judea Alhadef lives and works in their eco art installation converted school bus tiny home in Paonia, Colorado. Did I get it all? With her husband, Wild Menagerie, and their 10-year-old son, Zazu, and Golden Doodle Mac. Kara has published dozens of books and articles on gender, art, sexuality, climate justice, ethnic, and cultural studies. Her photographs, performance videos are in private and public collections, including the MoMA Salzburg and San Francisco MoMA, and her theoretical and visual work in the subject of documentaries for international public television. She's a former professor at UC Santa Cruz and Global Center of Advanced Studies and program director for Jews of the Earth. Kara teaches, performs, and parents a creative, zero-waste life. So a big welcome to Carolina, the current Elsewhere director, Laura, the other artist currently on residence here with me, and Kara, a local artist mother. Thanks, all three of you, for being here, and I'm so excited for our conversation tonight. All right, to start, I want Carolina to kind of set the stage for us and just share a little bit more about Elsewhere, what brought you here, because I think you were a former artist in residence, and maybe a little bit about specifically why you have family residencies and if you have any info on the history of your family residency. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. Thank you guys all for coming. Excited to chat with y'all and hear any questions. So Elsewhere Studios is an artist residency here in Paonia, Colorado. This is actually our 10-year anniversary hosting artists. And it was started out of a desire to create a community art space by Willow Wingood, Karen Good, and Maya Arthur. And it's kind of a funky DIY artist space that invites creatives of all types to come here and focus on their creative work for 1 to 6 months. And when they're here, their time is theirs. They can explore their own creative practice, have time to rest, and because that's such an important part of the creative process, as well as share their work with the community and form new friendships and relationships and collaborations. So I was actually an artist in residence myself in 2013. I just graduated college with a focus in drawing and was kind of wondering what I was going to do after college and how to enter into the world as this artist outside of school. And I found artist residencies, kind of just searching online. And Elsewhere was the first one that I found. And I applied, and I got it. And it completely changed my life. I met my best friend and collaborator who, she and I do the Piney Wood Atlas project together. We met here at Elsewhere that summer and just had a really transformative time. And it was really important to have that period of time to focus on my work and kind of figure things out with my own practice, but also meet all the wonderful community members. And in around Elsewhere is this naturally built art wall that was being built during my residency. And it was over 100 community members coming together and doing three different types of ways of naturally building. And I'd never seen anything like that before. And it really changed the way that I thought about how art can bring community together. And so after I left Elsewhere, I just started pursuing opportunities that led me into ways of bringing communities together through creativity. So I came
back.
How
long were you a resident?
2 months.
Okay. In the summer?
In the summer, yeah. May and June. And then Alicia, my collaborator and best friend, she got here the second month in June. And her residency was like kind of this last minute opportunity that she found out about, and then the director at the time told her the wrong month. So is this like the miscommunication that they didn't realize until she was already on her way? So she wasn't even supposed to be in residence while I was here, and so it was just like completely serendipitous. And then we became housemates, and then we came back the second year in 2014 to be residents again as a collaborative team for 2 months. And then after that we began Piney Wood Atlas, where we research DIY residencies around the country. And that experience and that project kind of led me to finding Elsewhere had an opening for a program manager. And then I applied.
And how long have you been program manager?
Since 2017. I was program manager in 2017 and then became the director in 2018. And
so you like it here?
I like it. Yeah, I do. It's been great to just kind of be on the other end of it and help other artists have a similar life-changing experience. People end up moving here or they end up making some drastic change in their life or just, you know, finding something within their own art practice that they wouldn't have been able to find just like in their home studios or at home, because there's something that unlocks when you're in a new place and you have a new schedule and you have just new surroundings. This place was founded by mothers and grandmothers and by Willow and Karen. So Karen was the director and she was the one that found Sustainable Arts Foundation, which is a grant that funds parents and funds residencies to host family residencies. And we had already hosted families at Elsewhere, but kind of in a non-official way. Mm-hmm. It's like we would work with parents if they wanted to bring their kids. But something that we found was you need to pay artists and you need to pay parents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to offer different time periods to have it be more accessible for parent artists, because usually our time spans are 1 to 6 months and that may not be necessarily accessible for parents. So one of the things that we changed for the Family Residency Month is shortening it to, this one is 10 days, but the first year was, we had a couple artists who were here for 1 week, and then we had a couple artists who were here for 2 weeks. The 1 week people said that was too short, and the 2 week people said that was too long. So we found the 10 day, we'll see, to kind of be the sweet spot, and paying the artists a stipend and allowing them to bring their families, I think, is a really important aspect of it too, because it's one thing to pay the artist and say you can come, but you can't bring your families. Not a lot of residencies allow you to like also bring your children or partners. So that's been a really special aspect of it, because a lot of the times the children in residence end up having their own creative practice. Mm-hmm. They've, you know, have, we had a show last week with the first cohort, and you know, one of the kids showed their films that they'd worked on during COVID of their little sister, and another one had worked on a book and drawings and presented about it. And so that's just like a really cool aspect of the family residency, that they can say that they had their first residency at five.
Or even just if they don't participate in the art, just experiencing a different atmosphere, having like grounds that support like a kid just exploring out in the back. I mean, right now there's like 10 kids out back, as like all the parents are in here listening to this. With one dad stuck out there, I think. But, you know, just that like sort of community coming together, and there's flexibility and space for families, I think is, like you said, what you don't often get in residencies.
Yeah, and I think an important aspect of it too is like having that experience of, you know, being able to have your kids see you as an artist as well, and not having to separate like, well, I have this opportunity as an artist, and now I have to leave.
Right. The only time you get to make art is when you're not around your kids. yeah, I love that you're kind of pushing against that model. Okay, Kara and Laura, I want to hear more about your art practices. Since Kara, you're a local artist, and Laura, you're the other artist here on residence with me. So if both of you could give us a brief rundown of your art career, and maybe just share a little bit about like what got you started, and then, you know, a few high points along your journey. Laura, can you start for us?
Sure, Kayla. No. Yeah. So thanks everyone for being here. Yeah, I think it's funny. I mean, I was exposed to a lot of art. My mom was really into art and museums and took me around. She kind of grew up in New York herself, so growing up, art was always kind of a part of my life, but I never, when I went to school, I studied media and really gravitated towards communication. And it was really in college when I kind of like linked onto film and film studies, and kind of film as an art form, and also film as like political resistance and film as political education, and the way that experimental film can be, have a really powerful message, but also look really different than like the film and the media that we're used to consuming. And I think that that, for me, was what got me excited about media and media making and independent media. So that was kind of really like the path that I was on, and that I still really is like, you know, most of my life. After college, I got a job at a film archive in Berkeley, California. And, you know, it was kind of like an assistant first out of college position, but it was awesome because I was working in an art museum, and I got to pick up famous people from the airport and work with curators and like get to see all these filmmakers and take, you know, classes. And that was kind of where I started more like video production and editing, kind of like diving into making work myself. And at a certain point I was like, all right, Berkeley's amazing, but it's also like really saturated. Like it's got a lot going on. I come from Allentown, a small northeastern town. Like I'm ready to kind of go home, you know, and sort of like bring some of what was like motivating me back, you know, back home. And so I came back home, went to film school at Temple, and really kind of went there with an interest in like community media and like and organizing and interactive media, new media, whatever that was in the time at, you know, 2010, 2005. And so my thesis kind of while I was in grad school was a mobile media van. So my father was a painting contractor and he had an old van, and I was really into mobile projects, right? So I've always been kind of like the bus. I have other, you know, and it's, there's something about that for me. It was like bringing work to the people, right? And kind of like not waiting for people to come to you, but like seeing where gaps are in the community. So I was a little bit of like an outlier in that I didn't make a film and I didn't identify as like a filmmaker. I was like, I'm going to get all these little pocket cameras and I'm going to go teach people how to make these 1 minute movies. And, you know, it's going to be great. So that was kind of like my work. And then that van went on to kind of took me to other cities and other neighborhoods and other residencies, which was really great. And then kind of like, you know, I've done like documentary and editing and freelance. And then I think kind of my work, once I started working full time at a community media center, I was around like digital media all the time and like a computer. And I was kind of like, I don't want to do video anymore. And so I feel like my work took this turn that was much more like public and out in the world engaged. So I, you know, created a project. My partner builds tricycles, cargo tricycles. And I kind of met him through this project where he built us a tricycle to serve hot tea in kind of empty lots in Chinatown in Philadelphia. So we would sort of set up, we would have benches, we would serve tea, we had kind of these pop-up workshops, and it was like, it was really fun and spontaneous. And so I think a lot of what I do and the things I'm grounded towards is like, what's the idea and then what's the form that fits that idea? And so...
do you identify as a conceptual artist then?
No. I mean, I feel like there's this kind of social practice world, community artist, community engaged artist. I think my work is like less performative and more really like relationship based. And so my projects tend to be long. I tend to get to know people, which made coming here an interesting thing. Cause I was like, I'm not here long enough to get to know people. I'm not going to pretend to do something in the community of, you know, Paonia. I couldn't even pronounce the name until I got off the airplane. You know? So
a lot
yeah.
of vowels in one word.
A lot of vowels. Yeah. What else was kind of a highlight? Yeah. I mean,
do you have any context for, other than the couple projects you mentioned, anything about the visuals of your work? Like if we were to watch, do you have tangible film work that we could see? And like, what would that look like?
Yeah. I have kind of short form, like documentary work. I feel like it's not that visually interesting per se. It's sort of more kind of like capturing portraits of people in the places that they like live and work. And so that's kind of my way into like a place, is even my way into like Philadelphia, is just like talking to people in the market, being like, huh, that's interesting. How did you get here? You know, in Philadelphia, there's the Italian market, which is kind of well known, but now it's really like the Mexican market. And so I was kind of like, okay, what's everyone's story? So I think I use video and I use my art to just build those relationships with people. So it all looks very different and it's not always very polished, and that's not like what's important.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So, yeah.
All right, Kara, can you give us a little bit of a rundown of your art career? Like maybe if there's something early on you could point back to that got you interested in art, and kind of a few high points along your journey?
So yes, similarly with parent influence, my mom's a visual artist and my father's an art historian and my stepfather is a sculptor, and our lives were always rotating around not just living in art spaces and having art be a given, but actually really the practice of questioning the act of questioning itself is an art practice. So we would, just as a child growing up in the art department in Boulder at CU, and watching how my parents interacted with their students, and watching the tension with my mom in the art world, the New York art world. So all of that was very much a part of my consciousness growing up in relation to art. And my father's obsession with bodies as an art historian, which led me to perhaps to a certain degree with my relationship with bodies as the main subject of my photographic work and my video work. And I had been, after high school, I had been living on a commune and in Europe and North Africa in various intentional communities and writing incessantly. And I came back to the States to Sarah Lawrence College, which was a creative writing school, but I felt that it was so formulaic, I wasn't able to really be in my words. And there happened to be a photography class available with Joel Peter Witkin, and that just... that blew it all open because of his support and because of the willingness of students to surrender their bodies to my camera and me. So I immediately dove into color, large format, analog. Obviously, this was a long time ago in the 1990. And for many years, that was the working with the vulnerability of the body and looking at people's anomalies, whether it was something structural in their body, like their pronounced collarbones, or something that put them in a realm of difference, and then highlighting that, amplifying those differences with my camera, where the actual act of photographing in itself was about vulnerability and about contortion and transgressing any possible level of comfort, both psychologically, politically, and definitely in terms of our bodies with friction and weight and temperature shifts. And that led to the viewer's vulnerability, is what I found out, because I ended up going through several years worth of censorship challenges in non-art and art spaces, where people were projecting their histories of abuse or if they were political activists in a certain field, their agenda onto the images, and then it became a rationale for removing my work. And a lot of this happened both in Pennsylvania, initially, in university settings, and then also in San Francisco in political spaces. And all of that, I realized during that process that people's imaginations are much more threatening than whatever we're deeming as reality. And each time I would have a comment book available for people to write down their sense of fear or threat or pleasure that they were experiencing with the images, and then I incorporated those into live performance pieces and collaborative performance pieces, and that really opened up my understanding of what it was that I was already doing in terms of exploring a politics of difference and how difference is so threatening to people, and what do we do with that? How do we not just take that as a normalized way to operate in the world, which definitely feeds into parenting, 100,000,000,000%. And then the digital world came in. As I was pregnant, I was finishing my doctoral work. I couldn't adapt to the digital world. I did my last series of digital work when I was pregnant with Zazu, when I was, he was born on my 40th birthday. And at that point, I refused to assimilate. And that was devastating to have lost, to have actively lost my visual art practice. But I went back to writing at that point. And this is the initial work that I did with about 100 of my images in here, The Viscous Expectations. And through that understanding of text and image, it really opened up the image-making process. So each time I was complicit in self-silencing, it ended up being a venue for incredible receptivity and growth. And then just recently I was at a residency. It had been over a decade since I was in a residency, and I went to one recently. I was planning on working on my climate crisis novel, and there was a photographer there who insisted, jump back in, and I did, and it was glorious.
And you made some visual art?
Yeah. Nice. Several bodies of work, using my own body and other people's in the residencies. And to have this dialogue between text and image really feels like that has coalesced my parenting practice very much.
Lovely. Thank you both. Okay, so outside of your art career, are there any other jobs that you work? You know, a lot of the work of being an artist is figuring out how to make it work. So I think that's often part of the conversation is like, you know, what is sort of the structure within which you are an artist? So just curious if either of you have another job or if there's any other roles and responsibilities. We're going to talk about parenting, but that you kind of own up to in your life. Cara, do you want to start?
As an independent writer, I was in academia teaching gender studies and art, but left academia for a number of the reasons that I'm mentioning in terms of students refusing, many of my students, even at UC Santa Cruz, refusing relational explorations and new territory. So again, the work I was doing outside of the camera relationship completely fed into my understanding of what it was that I was doing with the camera, which was obviously very, very exciting. And then I was doing years of work with Good Vibrations outreach for sex ed. And again, it's like all these spirals feeding into each other and very much fed into what it was that I was exploring with sexuality and my images.
I lived around the corner from Good Vibrations when I lived in Berkeley. Yeah. And my housemate worked there, so great connection. So I work full-time at a community media center. It's a public access television station and community radio station, so I was excited about the community radio station here. And I oversee the education programs and do a lot of like producing and production with nonprofits and community members. So that's, my 9-to-5.
Okay, Laura, speaking of, could you talk a little bit about what the art scene is like where you live and sort of in your neighborhood? Are you right in the city in Philly?
Yeah. Philly is like an amazingly collaborative and community-oriented place to live and work. It definitely has a lot of kind of DIY roots, which is still there, but, all cities is changing and gentrifying and is becoming, a little less scrappy. I think there's a great independent, film community. There's people that do art in galleries. There's people that kind of do a lot of multimedia work, people that commute to New York. So, and there's a lot of like really neighborhood-based work and people that are really trying to figure out like how to do work in community and what does that look like. It's Philly's great. If anyone ever comes and visits, I recommend it.
Okay. And Carolina and Cara, what's the art scene like here in Paonia? How long have you been here, Cara? Because you're relatively new.
A couple months, yeah.
A couple months? I was thinking a couple years. So you're really new. Okay. Tell me a little bit about what the art scene is like here and how you feel like artists are seen and supported in this town.
I mean, I guess I'll just say Paonia has been phenomenal in terms of the overlays of what it means to be many. That's what I've seen here.
Like a multifaceted person?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. Okay. And yes. Yeah. And what I find a deep sense of relationality, like what I wasn't finding in university life. And that there's just tremendous support and enthusiasm, and I haven't plunged into people's bodies as models yet, but I'm assuming that there's going to be definitely a lot of
some receptivity there.
Yeah, willingness and.
So, what pleasure. Brought you to Paonia? If you've only been here a couple months,
Actually, the parenting world was why we left the Eco Village where we were in North Carolina, Earth Haven Eco Village, and what drew us here.
All right, Carolina, what's your take on sort of just the general sense of the art scene here, and how do you feel like artists are seen or supported?
Yeah, I was really impressed by the artists when I first arrived to Paonia in 2013. It was just, there were so many different types of artists all kind of doing whatever. I mean, there was just such a fertile ground here for being able to do what you want to do because it's a small rural town. And back then, you know, rent was cheap and you can have a lot of access to things. And it's just different than at that time I was living in San Francisco. So it was such a different feeling of, you know, what it's like to be an artist in a small rural town. And there's just so many different types of art here that this community, I think, kind of is proud to have. You know, we're a creative district, and to have different types of art, be visual arts, food making, farmers, musicians, and, you know, call them all artists. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that about Paonia and how it's...
Yeah, food is art here.
Yeah, food
is
art.
Beer is art here. Yeah. Murals.
Jewelry. Like, yeah. Dance. Movement. It's all part of the personality of Paonia. And I feel like there's a good support group here with the artists. I mean, there's so many artists in this room right now that know each other and have studios and support each other. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there are things that are lacking, but for the most part, there's a lot of support.
Let's come back to that, what is lacking. But your comment just made me think, I think sometimes in the capital A art world, there's a lot of scarcity mindset. And I think some people would come into a community like this and see, well, the farmer's calling himself an artist. Like, excuse me, like, he's not an artist, you know? And I think there's sometimes there's this like threat of, well, what it means to be an artist is this. You have a gallery, you have a studio, you have a... and so it's just, you know, really nice to be in a place where those boundaries don't seem to exist, or maybe they're more porous than they are in other places. And I think some people would listen and say, well, that must make the art very watered down, or, you know, like there's this perception that unless you're going hard at it all the time and you're not just living your life as an artist, then, you know, you're not really making art. But what do you want? Do you want a life that's full of art and artful, or do you
capitalism?
Know? Yes.
Right. I mean, I was living in New York for years for the art market, and yeah, I mean that's
capital
suicide.
C, in some capitalism. Way, yeah.
I think that's what makes Paonia and this whole valley special, is because I feel like a lot of people are here because they're pushing back on the idea of capitalism or being a part of the rat race or whatever. It's like, we want to live an alternative life outside of that. And so a lot of people here are interested in, you know, sustainability and like growing their own food and not having that scarcity mentality with each other. So I just like the idea of redefining creatives to include all of that, because I do believe that it does.
Yeah. Beautiful. Okay. What about what resources are needed here? Because I think it's wonderful and good to talk about the beautiful things of a place, but there's still always lack. There's always places that we're not shining light on, things that we do need. So if the two of you could speak to what you feel like resources are needed here, or maybe some change that you would want to see.
I wouldn't call this resource, even though unfortunately it's... people are distilled into resources, but ethnic diversity is the primary lack that I experience as an artist, as a mother, human, in every capacity. And that's heartbreaking and predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I'd be curious to hear from other people too in the audience who are artists, but I would say just also, Paoni has just been changing as well. Like housing is getting a bit more difficult and tight and expensive. And so having housing in a studio space, I know, was difficult for a lot of artists. And then I've also heard from, like, we have a lot of artists who, you know, stay after elsewhere and they become permanent Paoni residents, that there's not, they have to sell their artwork outside of Paoni. They have to be diligent on the online market because they're not really supported financially here. Mm-hmm. And so in ways it's like, well, that's why we live here, because it's not like Aspen either. Mm-hmm. It's its own thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would be curious to hear from people in the audience who are more, you know, active in their art practice as like their full-time thing, what, you know, what is here and what isn't here.
Mm-hmm. Let's hold that. Maybe we can come back to that. Yeah. Or that could be a spinoff night of conversation or workshop resource needed sharing session. Laura, do you want to speak to just any resources that you feel like you need where you live?
I don't know. That's hard. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of kind of like, nothing kind of like immediately comes to mind. I mean, obviously like property value is becoming less and less affordable. So in terms of people, I feel like there was more of like a squatter culture and kind of like a house show culture that's kind of going away. It's harder for people to do that, but no, I think there's really great like local grant making organizations. There's great opportunities that are not galleries to show work and present work and be part of experiences with other people. Mm-hmm. So cool. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk studio space, because that was a good segue. Just curious, the three of you, do you have a studio? What is your studio space? And maybe just briefly, how has the meaning of studio sort of changed over time for you? Kara, could you start for us?
I think studios have always been other people's bodies. And architecture or natural environments that reflect the margins of people's bodies. So playing with the natural world, fascinating architectural shapes and the human form has been.
Laura, what does studio mean to you? Do you have a physical studio?
No, it's my computer at a desk. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. To Carolina's point about having kids see you as an artist in this space, I mean, I think this is the, at home, like mom is on Zoom calls all the time, and his understanding of what I do for work is just like talking to other people on the computer all day. He has like no concept. And so here, you know, I was doing something on the computer, and we've been like photocopying and scanning, collecting. And he said something about mom being an artist. And I was like, oh my God, it just broke my heart. Cause he's never said that. He's kind of like, he has his art teacher at school and our friend paints murals and he sees them, you know, but he's never seen me kind of do art. So that's been really cool. But yeah, no, I mean, I use outdoor spaces, other people's spaces, and a lot of just like digital work.
Tea carts.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Buses, you know.
Carolina, what about you? Do you have a studio?
I'm actually in the middle of leaving my studio with my partner, Henry, who's also the program manager here, and moving it into a spare bedroom that we have at the house, because I feel like that's all I need right now. The idea of a studio for me has changed a lot since being in residence here and a lot of my work being painting and drawing and within a studio space like this. And then with Piney Wood Atlas, our studio became road tripping and interviewing and recording and, you know, doing photography and then coming back and making a book about it. But I was like, oh, I don't want to be inside the studio anymore. I want to be outside talking to people. And that also has changed a little bit now. I just feel like I need a desk and my colored pencils and my computer, and that will probably change in the future too. It's just kind of ever evolving.
Cool. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the overlap of art and motherhood. Laura and Cara, I'm just interested to hear if you feel like you've made any compromises in your art career since becoming a mother. Laura, you want to start for us?
Yeah, I guess. I had Phoenix when I was 39 and he's 3. So, you know, I have memories of not so long ago just Googling like artist and mothers. Like, what do people do? Like, what is my life going to be like now that I'm going to have a kid?
Which the fact that you had to Google it because you had no models or prior understanding.
Or even like understanding of like artists who are sort of known for their practices like interrogating motherhood and the concept of parent residencies was new and something, you know, I learned about from friends. And so, yeah, it still feels really new to me. I mean, I think I have to be much more selective about projects that I take on because it's kind of like everything happens after bedtime or on the weekend, you know, if Steven's working. So it's just like I can't say yes to, you know, a million things. But yeah, I mean, I think this, the fact that like I'm here is amazing, you know, and then it's like, doing things like this shows other people that you can do things like this. And I think this will sort of like help spur ways that I'm kind of like integrating, you know, him into, and I think the type of work that I do will change, you know, so that he is kind of part of it. And it's probably more, I started doing like an event series when I bought my house like 6 years ago. I was like curating music and art and conversation. And those were always like very family friendly. And so pre-COVID that ended and I'm really sort of excited to start that again and have him be a part of that. So.
And 3 is a good transition age too, you know, kind of before 3, it's like, who knows like what work you can get done. But yeah. Cara, what about you? Do you feel like you've made any compromises in your art career because of motherhood?
I'd say the opposite. I think I breastfed Zazu for four years, his first 4 years, which is when I wrote and published this. And I think it really, I think I was channeling because of the hormones, and it really opened up a whole world also of the politicization of the body in very different ways. And it really tightened and expanded my understanding of what I had been doing even as an undergrad. Corporeal politics was what I was focusing on as way back when. And because of the simultaneity of politics and art and daily life, it's been his presence, our pregnancy, all of it, our birth, has been an integral. Not seamless at all, very bumpy. But I wouldn't say it was motherhood. I would say it's infrastructural support around lack of infrastructural support around being a woman, just institutionalized misogyny.
And how did you sort of, within the framework of that lack of support, but still breastfeeding your child who was 4 while producing a book and creating art and teaching, like logistically, how did that happen for you? Did you get childcare? Like
No, I don't think I've ever had a babysitter. Also, because I had basically no income. I live in a barter economy, and I've lived in a barter economy for decades. So I wouldn't even be able to conceive of a babysitter. I could trade childcare. But him being here, like, I'm sorry that he's outside playing with the kids. Just because the witnessing and the embodiment, the enfleshment, like being in here sweating and watching me sweat, and that to me is all very much a part of what it means to live art, where it's not something that you just go and do. It's not a job. Mm-hmm. Just like being involved with climate justice, it's not a job. It's not, you don't just, you don't do it and then not do it. It just is.
Anything to add in terms of childcare, structural support?
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, we don't have childcare. I mean, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's like really hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Ain't nobody has childcare.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's like, yeah. And also, I just want to say I was a single mom for many years, and I think that also made the integration imperative. And to break down, like we're talking about economics, to break down the stereotypes that, or the assumptions that a single mom shouldn't be doing that, shouldn't be committing to her passions, you know, because she's got rational things to, mm-hmm. to focus on.
Okay, but also, how has just you coming into your role as a mother sort of shifted the way you make art? Even though you've talked about the integration of it and the lack of support, like mentally, was there a shift? Was there a transformation? A lot of people talk about sort of motherhood as this experience of, you know, sort of reshaping the way you view the world. And if you're an artist and you had kids later, you know, like you already had established art practices and careers and your brain sort of formed in your art making before you became a mother. And so I'm just curious about that sort of mental shift, that identity shift that happened within either of you.
Go for it. Yeah.
As I said before, a deepening, I think. And I think one of the gifts of motherhood is that it brings us into, it reminds us of who we are, but also it opens up an ancestral memory and that connective tissue and sort of kind of, I don't want to say solidified because it didn't harden, but maybe drew into focus those relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess just kind of like a deepening, more personal, like, compassion for other mothers and other kids in a way that's not like, oh, that's cute, you know, but like, yeah, really being able to like start to see in a way that I didn't before, you know.
Okay, one more question and then we'll see if the audience has any questions for you and then we'll wrap up with our final five quick fun questions. This is a fun one. I think this is probably the longest interview question that's ever been out there, but just what does a day in your life look like? Like what, you know, kind of walk us through sort of the mundane or the normal snapshot of like what you do, all three of you. Carolina, starting with you, like as multiple jobs, you're an artist, you live here in the mountains, you're co-director elsewhere, just kind of, and a lot of people when I ask this, they're like, I can't talk about a day, can I talk about a week? which I understand that having many hats that I wear, you know, like one Mondays and Tuesdays look very different. But if you just want to share a little bit more about the day-to-day life, I just find it fascinating.
Yeah, I think that my whole day-to-day life, I think it's changed a lot since COVID too, just like reimagining what I'm supposed to be doing or what my day is supposed to look like. So it honestly, every day looks really different because I have to juggle so many things. So some days I wake up really early and some days I wake up really late. I always started out with some coffee and breakfast and I don't know, get to work on whatever I'm working on that day. And lately it's been jumping into the ditch because it's so hot and walking the dog and making food.
Having multiple roles and responsibilities, how do you sort of maintain a level of organization?
Kind of don't right now. I try to, and like in moments I'm way better at it. And I think taking this year and a half during the pandemic where we all kind of had to like just take a break from certain things or reimagine what we're doing and what our lives look like during all these traumatic events. Yeah, it's been kind of difficult to like get back into the groove of things and keep things organized and do the calendar meeting Zoom thing. It's been challenging to kind of get back into that, and I'm ready to, you know, take a step back. And so lately it's just been kind of more free form of what I'm feeling like, which means that some balls are dropped, but that's been fine. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of all over the place right now.
Kara, what about you? Just a little glimpse of a day in the life, some favorite moments in a typical day for you, and a little bit about just how you kind of organize and structure the different roles and responsibilities you have.
Let's see. When Wild and I, with my partner and I, first got together about 4 years ago, I had left academia, he had left the nonprofit world, and we both were committed to redefining productivity. That didn't really happen. So because of that, my productivity obsession is, or just, I don't want to say obsession, I don't want to pathologize it. Again, I think that's part of our sexist culture. But so I don't really wake up because I'm already kind of awake when the morning arrives.
Outside of our home, we have set up bus seats as yoga props. So after I sneak out of the bus, trying not to wake up any of my family, any of the quadrupeds or bipeds in my family in the bus, I go upside down on the yoga props. I do my headless headstand, where the world makes so much more sense in an upside down position, and I get clear as I invert.
A lot of what my day is finding those fragments or reassembling the fragments. I'm always working on multiple writing projects at once, articles and two different books, and folding in, okay, how does my visual work fit in? How does my differences with parenting fit in? So all of that is just, it's part of the everyday. And then, you know, I come in, I'm already a little worked up, and my family's sleepy, and so I'm always navigating difference, like somewhat difference in energy, not always, but often, and dealing with stress of being a mother, and your child needs to do perhaps these things in order to have this happen. So a lot of my day is about witnessing what I would like to be different with the fullness. And again, I think this has to do with our culture, but the internal apologetic voices that you need to tone it down, you need to funnel. And I think, you know, if we lived like various Arabic cultures, embrace contradiction, for example, and ambiguity. And so I write a lot about that, and I photograph that. And I also try and teach Zazu how that is, again, it's part of the day. So as you're asking about the daily practice, that's just normal day, like eating our eggs and kale and sauerkraut.
Yeah, so wake around 7. I guess I'll take back what I said about childcare, because Phoenix does go to school now, so I'm grateful for that.
There you go.
And yet while he's there, I'm always just doing my nonprofit job. I never think about kind of interrupting that for art making. And so that's kind of like, I've started to carve out time in the mornings, even if it's like 10 minutes, just like 10 minutes to try to think and write. Or yeah, sometimes I go for a run, but that's not very often. So do my work all day, organize, coordinate, blah, 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 computer stuff. No, I love my job though. I mean, I'm excited about the work that I do at Philly Cam. And then I pick him up around like 3, and we go to the playground for 2-3 hours, and then come home. He watches some funny shows on the wall while I cook dinner. Steven gets home around 7. We hang out for 2 hours, do our bedtime, and I'm in bed by like 9:30. And then we wake up, do it all over again.
I love the show during dinner prep. That's my...
Yeah, like, he misses that the most.
Time for the show. I like to cook dinner in peace. It's like my time to... Yeah. Okay, we can take a couple audience questions if anybody has anything that... throughout the breadth of the conversation that you sort of wanted to go back to, or just anything you want to ask these artists or Carolina up here. Yes.
I'm just curious for the... if there is ever shame and guilt that comes up for you as being a mom and artist, and how you deal with that. Because I think it's very different for women. And I'm just curious if you experience shame or guilt with your mothering art practice and how you deal with it if you do.
Yeah. I mean, less, I mean, more guilt than shame. I mean, more just mother, less artist, but more just like, can I have time to myself and not feel like I should be with my kid? Can I, you know, just that level of always, and even having an amazing partner who like will be like, go, 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 go. You know, it's still kind of like, I don't want to be out for too long. I should come back. You know, it's like a constant and it's horrible. It's like who... You know, and I can think about like who's put those voices in our heads, right? So like lots of reasons. So yes, 100%.
I remember my own relationship with my mom and her career. I always felt like it was her career or me, that there was always this competition. And she was much more immersed in the New York art world her entire trajectory of her art career than I have been. Mine was a small window. But I would say it's not about being an artist, but just being in the society. I don't think I've ever felt guilt or shame about being torn between my art and my child, because they feel one and the same in so many ways. But how to... like what I was talking about with productivity, how to shed how much I've internalized those norms that don't have venues to support that kind of energy. And then how does he see that tension, or how does he experience in his body that kind of tension? So that's, maybe other people have another term in addition to guilt and shame. We can make the list long.
I was just reading an article from, or an interview, a written interview from another artist, and just so identified with their answer. But they mentioned that, you know, basically studio time for them is after the dad comes home, and then Saturdays or Sundays, and how that always makes her feel like she never gets to do anything leisurely with her family, because... you know, like she's choosing, do I go to the playground with my kids after dinner, or do I commit to my art practice? Like, because the work of the mother usually is, and not always, right? Like my partner and I are pretty cohesive in like trying to share childcare and our careers. But this mother in particular, her husband works a corporate job in New York and she's home in New Jersey with the kids, you know? And so she just was talking about like on Saturday, you know, I could be at the orchard picking apples with my family, or I could be painting because I'm an artist, you know? And just that like gut, I mean, I just like reading that, I was just like, I understand that, because oftentimes I feel like mothers are put in that situation where they have to either choose the pleasurable, relaxing, fun, leisurely activities that happen on the weekends or the marginalized time with your family or your art career, right? And it just, it's tough. Any other? Yes.
So for the mamas, wondering if you could speak more to just like the concept of space and like how do you make space both literally but also just sort of like in time, and just for your brain to sort of turn on and come online to like be able to...
Kara's brain's always on, even at night.
I do that. That's amazing. I have a 2-year-old, and I'm a writer and a journalist, and it's like been absent, mm-hmm. basically, and I was caretaking for my dad. But, like, it's, yeah, I really am, like, at a point wanting that to come back in, but I find it challenging. I can't, like, have 10 minutes of space in a day and, like, go do something with it creatively. Mm-hmm. So curious if there was, like, an age your kids reached or just, like, a way that you found a way to, like, turn that on, or, like, a critical mass moment of, like, you need this many hours in order to be able to, like, really plug into that creative flow.
No, I mean, it's a question I have all the time. I mean, I think about what my life was like before, and I was just like, do-do-do, filling up journals and, you know, walking around and sitting in the park and, like, traveling. And I mean, I had, you know, and I mean, I have a great life now, but it was like, yeah, that lack of, like, for me, that reflective time is, like, so crucial. And it, like, it's so hard that it's, like, missing, you know, it's just, like, hard to squeeze it in. So I don't know. You don't have an answer. It does get easier as they get, you know, more, like, you know, you're not afraid they're gonna, like, die every 5 minutes. But yeah, so, but I don't know. It's, I mean, things like just trying to, like, intentionally give yourself permission to, I think that's, to me, what the residency is about. It's like, I'm here to rest or to make work, and I, like, have permission, and I can take that permission outside of here as well, and I have to do that, you know, not wait for someone to give it to me, you know.
I would say also, I teach Iyengar yoga, and I would say to my students, you know, people who are trying to carve out a time for their practice, how can you integrate your practice into when you're washing the dishes, when you're going pee, you know, how can that body consciousness and that attunement come in the most mundane? And I would say the same thing with your writing. I mean, always have paper and pencil nearby for ideas. That's
great advice. Two similar answers, but kind of structurally a little different. I think just having sort of, if you can have a framework or an overarching project and just commit to it. Like a lot of visual artists do like a 100-day project where they're like, I'm just going to write for 5 minutes a day, or I'm going to make one painting a day. And some days I might have 2 minutes for the painting, and some days I might have 2 hours. But I think kind of coming up with a framework for sort of some level of commitment that's flexible, but it's just like a thing that you're doing. I think, and not getting stuck in the mental space of it, but just, I don't care what this 2 minute painting looks like. I'm just, the point is just to do it, right? And I think that's what happens a lot in, especially in early motherhood, and particularly with visual artists, is it's like, my work might be crap right now, but I'm just gonna keep using the muscle, right? Cause I don't wanna have like, I wanna keep like staying in the game sort of, and like having something. And then also I think just remembering that like, your creative practice is like a lifelong trajectory. And, you know, for many people, it's like this time is the time that's hardest to get in the studio maybe, but like you might have a time and space when you're 40 or 50 that like whatever, something changes and you can be in the studio every day. And maybe other artists never get to have an every day in the studio, but they always have like the morning. And so just kind of looking at it more longer term, if you can, like, I feel like that's helpful for me to think, even though right now I might only have 1 hour and my peers might have 4 hours, you know, over the course of a lifetime, I feel like in general, most artists probably make work about the same amount of time, but you know, it kind of all ebbs and flows with the different seasons that we have, mm-hmm. I guess. And that was kind of a recent realization as I was reading something and thinking like, you know, we see it so like microscopically, but if we can kind of think I'm in it for the long term, and you just kind of have to trust that it'll ebb and flow. Do we have one more audience question? If anybody has one?
I just wanted to add.
Yeah.
In terms of seasonal cycles and to remember that we really are part of a greater, many greater holes, multiple holes. And this upcoming year in Jewish traditions is the Shemitah year, which is kind of like a sabbatical year every 7 years. And to remember, you know, how much of the voices that are telling us that we need to be doing something constantly, and like the voices that I'm addressing, you know, if we think of, if maybe if you do some cross-cultural research and look at cyclical relationships in different cultures, maybe that could influence you, and then that could actually expand your art practice and your writing practice. So what you think is a detriment may end up being, you know.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the like, you only have this much right around productivity. It's like you can do the same amount of work in 4 hours as you do in 8 hours. Like, I've definitely found that, like, okay, I'm pushing the stroller for 90 minutes and I'm getting a hell of a lot of work done. Like, even if it's like mental work or talking to someone, you know, that otherwise would have been kind of like expanded. So it becomes a little more concentrated.
Yes. Okay, so I have 5 quick questions that all of our panelists are going to answer, and then we will be done recording. So we'll start with Carolina and move through the answers and come back, okay? So who's your biggest art crush?
Right now it's Vija Clemens. Do you like it? Vija Clemens is a really amazing graphite artist who does like super detailed and rich drawings that I was able to see at the SF MoMA a couple of years ago. And it just like does these like gorgeous graphite drawings of the ocean and stars and clouds. And it's really hard to describe, but it's breathtaking.
Kara, biggest art crush?
My mom.
Aww.
Michaela Emoto Amato. And I would say it's because of her multiplicity and her absolute passion in these multiple spheres.
And she's a photographer?
No, she's used photography.
Okay.
She's a painter.
Okay.
We collaborate a lot. She did the paintings in Zazu Dreams. Painting installation artist.
Laura, biggest art crush?
No, no.
I know. You hate this question. I know.
Yeah. No, there's a project in Detroit called the Heidelberg Project, and the artist, Tyree Goyton, there's a similar artist in Philly, Isaiah Zagar, that does mosaics all over the city. So I love art that just spills out everywhere, takes over.
Okay, back to Carolina. Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
I want to bike across the country.
Ooh, good one. Kara?
I want to do that with you.
Yes!
I want to see the tree houses in Turkey.
Laura? train trip in Eastern Europe.
Nice. Okay, what film or book has inspired you greatly? Just pick one.
I was thinking that when I first saw the Freddie Mercury tribute concert, that when I was like 11 or something, that really impacted me.
Good one. Kara?
I was going to say 100 Years of Solitude, but in terms of surrealism, but that reminds me of David Byrne and Stop Making Sense. So,
Manufacturing Consent by Noam Chomsky. Yeah, I was like.
Okay, what's your favorite meal?
Breakfast burritos.
Ooh, good one. I don't think that's been an answer on here before, but we are in Colorado, so, you know. Kara?
Persimmons.
Persimmons.
Persimmons. Persimmons with everything.
Mm.
Kimchi. With white kimchi with persimmons.
Mm. Very specific. We've never had that answer either.
Tacos.
Nice.
Tacos.
We have had that answer. Because who doesn't love tacos? Okay, last question. Just want to offer the opportunity for you to give a shout out to thank somebody who supports you and the work you do and your life as an artist mother or just artist.
I would like to give a shout out to my partner, Henry.
Yay!
Who is the most supportive partner that I've had.
My mom.
Best friend, Aggie, out in Atlanta.
Awesome. Thank you all. This was amazing.
Thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton.
editing and mixing by John M. Budine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.